Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. And welcome to you, Bill Durbin.
Good morning.
Is it snowy in Duluth?
There's a little bit of snow falling, and we've had an average of about 15 below zero every night the last 3 days, so it's been really cold.
Really cold, yes. And it's been cold here, but I don't know that we've been that cold, actually. Anyhow, it's winter, and we might as well enjoy it because that's the way it's going to be. So let's talk about your, I think it's your latest book, although you may have one after this, but Until the Last Spike, The Journal of Sean Sullivan. This is sort of a, I'm almost going to say a series, although they're all different, but give us some background about the kind of books you read or you write.
Yeah, I mainly write historical fiction targeted for young readers anywhere from about fourth grade through eighth grade. But a lot of times adults enjoy my books just because of the historical content. And The Journal of Sean Sullivan, or Until the Last Spike, as it's been retitled, deals with a young boy working on the Transcontinental Railroad. And I do the same thing that I do in all of my books. I take a fictional character, place him back in time, and then surround him with characters from real history, real events, things that actually took place. And I've used the same mode writing about the fur trade, writing about lumberjacks and homesteaders and the Dust Bowl. And Until the Last Spike is actually a series of books published by Scholastic in the My Name is America series. They all deal with different aspects of American history.
And this one, for us, is close to home, starting out in Council Bluffs in Omaha.
Yeah, it's actually set right down the road from you. And
yes,
it was really fascinating. It's fascinating for me to study what the Wild West was like years ago, being that I live way up in northern Minnesota by the Canadian border. I live in an area that's, you know, so different than the plains, and it was really an educational experience for me to research what life was like back beginning in 1869 in your part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go for this research? How do you find all this historical background to make your books really true to life?
You know, the two best sources I found for research on the railroad were the Union Pacific Railroad Museum, which is located, you know, right near you in Council Bluffs. Great place to visit, in fact. And the Golden Spike Monument out in Promontory Point, Utah. The experts there were really helpful as well.
Good. So, again, kind of, As I read it, and I, you know, it's fun to read because, first of all, it's big print, it goes fast, and it's fascinating because of the real life history that you're talking about. But one of the things that I thought about as I was reading, you know, there were a lot of deaths, there were a lot of gruesome kinds of things that happened, and I know you go out and talk to kids, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But do kids, you know, they see so much TV and violence and so on, when they read these kinds of books that you write, do they believe this really happened?
You know, I think they do, and I've found in my research I don't write violent scenes in an attempt to be gratuitous and grab their attention, but I want to give kids a real sense of what life was like, and it was incredibly dangerous back in the late 1800s, and human life was not valued to the extent that it is today. You know, it wasn't uncommon to have one of these little hell on wheels towns west of Omaha, and actually have more people buried in the cemetery than were living in town. You know, that's just how incredibly dangerous it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that some people go, "What is real?" And especially if they're not familiar with this. And I happened to read the book, The Greatest Thing in the World, the only one in the world. Well, now I can't even tell you the title, but you're probably familiar with it. That was all about the railroad. And so I had that kind of background to say, yes, these things really did happen. And hopefully for young people, they're going, could I do that? Do they, when you visit with them, do they kind of raise that question? Could I do that? Because these are young people that they're in the stories.
They do. And, you know, invariably, one of the first questions students usually ask me is, well, of all the periods you've written about, which one would you like to go back and live in again?
Hmm.
And I always answer none of them. You know, we have it so much easier today than they did in any of the times that I've written about, that I feel like it's just so difficult for kids to imagine just the day-to-day struggle in terms of eating and the difficult labor that they had to engage in. And back then, if you were 13 years old, you were expected to be a productive member of the family. And if you did have a job outside the home, you know, your money invariably went to the family. You know, you didn't keep it for yourself. So it was a totally, totally different psychology in that respect.
Let's. I have another question related about those experiences in young people. But let's talk a little bit about what you do besides write books. You go out and visit schools.
I actually do usually about 50 school and library and conference appearances a year. And that's one of the real fun parts. As a former teacher, I spend a lot of times working with kids, and it's really fun to go out and get in touch with my audience. And I just got back recently from a trip to your part of the world. I did a talk at the Omaha Public Library and visited a couple schools in the area, and I'm coming back in February. I'm going to be speaking in Vermilion, South Dakota, and Sioux Center, Iowa, not too far away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll have to see if we can get you closer to home here, work on that a little bit. But so you talk about your books. Usually have students read some of the books before you visit?
Most of the time they have.
Okay,
so the one book that's actually taught more than any other is my fur trade book, The Broken Blade, that deals with a young boy set back in the fur trade days. And that ends up being a really good companion to most social studies curriculums.
Mm-hmm. Now, in this book, Until the Last Spike, there's a really strong father figure. Is that always the case in your books, that there's a strong adult figure that they can look up to, or are some of them really out there just on their own?
More often than not, the character is actually off on his own.
Uh-huh.
And again, that was typical of the old days.
Exactly.
In this case, I thought it would be a lot more credible to actually have an Irish father and his son working together,
mm-hmm.
because typically families kind of signed on and worked for the railroad together, and a good percentage of the people on the UP were of Irish extraction, mm-hmm. and a lot of them from the Chicago area, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you mentioned in the book several places about the other end, where they started on the other end of the railroad before they met in Utah. Many of the workers were Chinese, and that was quite different than the Irish families.
Yeah, it was, and a lot of the Irish workers on the UP were really insensitive to the Chinese, which really surprised me because, as I think we all know, a lot of Irish immigrants really picked on and teased and ridiculed when they first got to America, and you'd think that if they had a chance to extend a welcoming hand to the next generation, the Chinese immigrants, they would have done that, but in fact, they really made terrible jokes of the Chinese, teased them and picked on them, and that's one reason why the end of the book is so interesting, when the Chinese workers from the Central Pacific actually set the all-time track lane record, mm-hmm. when they actually go, 10 miles of track in a single day, which no one thought was physically possible.
Beat out the Irishman, and that was not a happy occasion for the Irishman.
It was not
was
a
it?
Happy day for them, and it also deals a lot, too, with the tragic thing that happened to both the herds of the buffalo.
Yes.
And as a consequence to that, the Plains Indians, because they needed the buffalo for not only food, shelter, and clothing, it was a big part of their religious faith. So when the buffalo herds were decimated, the Plains Indians pretty much knew that their way of life was going to end forever.
So, you know, that's all a part of that history. I can see where teachers could use these books so well in teaching so much of the history. The other question I wanted to ask was, you know, right now, the science fiction is that those kinds of stories are so hot. And this is just kind of the opposite to me of the science fiction. What kind of response do you get, you know, again, kids going, oh, yeah, this is for real and the other science fiction? Or, you know, what kind of response do you get?
Well, one thing that I've discovered, as a former teacher, I taught middle school, high school, and college English most of my life. I found that the kids can do a really good job, not only of reading fantasy and science fiction, a lot of them can do a real good job writing it. And a lot of times they ask me, well, are you ever going to write fantasy or sci-fi? And I say, you know, I really prefer the stories that are grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when they actually compare one to the other, in some ways, historical fiction is almost more compelling than the fantasy stories because of the underlying reality, the fact that kids are thinking, wait a minute, now this actually did happen.
Yes.
You know, a kid my age actually did have to live through this.
Yes, yes. Great, great books. And you have a lot of books. If we want to find your books, if we want to find out more information about your books, how do we do that?
If you look on my website, williamdurbin.com, It gives a good introduction to the kind of work that I've done. I've published 11 books altogether. As I mentioned, they deal with different aspects of American history. And that's a great place to kind of contact me, too, if anyone's interested in sending me an email or wants to get in touch.
Okay, William Durbin, it's durbin.com to check out his books and where you get those, and they would make wonderful Christmas presents. It's still time to get those. So we want to thank you very much, Bill Durbin, for visiting with us this morning.
Thank you very much, and happy holidays to everyone in your area.
Thank you. Until next time, here's a thought. Christmas is a season for kindling the fire of hospitality in the hall, the genial flame of charity in the heart. That's from Washington Irving.